Welcome, everyone, to our expert series, where I will have thoughtful conversations with subject matter experts focused on the complex needs of ultra-affluent families. For those of you who do not know me, I'm Austin Delvey, private wealth advisor with Wise River Advisors, a distinguished team within UBS Private Wealth Management. On today's episode, I have with me Eric Massey, Senior Vice President with Alliant Private Client Group. We will be discussing the ever-evolving landscape of property and casualty insurance in the wake of the devastating California wildfires. I am Logeless California, and I can be reached at austin.delve@ubs.com. He is not affiliated with UBS Financial Services, Inc., and his views are his own. All right. Well, Eric, thank you so much for joining me today. There's no question that in the wake of the fires and everything going on in Southern California, that I have you on here on our expert series for a reason. So thanks a lot for joining me. If you would just give a little background on yourself, your company, and what you do for clients.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Austin. So my name is Eric Massey. I am a risk advisor with Alliant Private Client based out of Los Angeles. My specialty and my focus has been assisting high net worth individuals with all of their property casualty insurance needs. So it's home, umbrella, autos, collections, watercraft, aircraft, myriad of issues, and really taking an advisory approach to that process. So Alliant is a large national insurance brokerage. And then within Alliant is our private client practice, which again is just focused on handling the personal needs of whether it's our commercial clients or working with individuals like yourself and assisting their clients with any risk management needs they may have.
All right. Well, thank you for that. So, you know, a lot of the clients and individuals that will be listening to these podcasts have reached the point of significant wealth and are in the wealth preservation phase. And you know, there's factors that we can control and factors that might otherwise be out of our control. And it's all essential to long-term wealth plans. And again, in the wake of the wildfires, where a lot of families have been devastated, some of which are clients that have been involved, it brings firsthand, and we've been seeing it firsthand, this whole concept, behavioral economic concept of loss aversion, and that we feel worse when bad things happen, and then we do feel good when good things happen. And unfortunately, the likelihood of natural disasters isn't going to be going away anytime soon. So with that, I think a broad overview of the landscape of property and casualty insurance as it relates to California and the wildfires, what you're seeing, the good, the bad, the ugly, it would be great to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting. Over the past 5 or 6 years, we've seen a real hardening of the insurance market, particularly in California. It's a myriad of issues and been driven by a number of factors, you know, inflation driving up costs, lack of available reinsurance for some of the insurance carriers, and also an increase in claims and exposures. We're seeing more catastrophic events over the last several years, particularly with respect to wildfires, than we've seen in our history. And so I think carriers are still working hard to try to analyze risk and using data and using current data while also navigating the California climate, what they have to do to get adequate rate and what adequate rate even looks like. So, you know, it's been a challenge leading up to the end of last year. Now, we've seen a bit of a paradigm shift where a lot more carriers, particularly in the high value space, have shifted into utilizing non-admitted insurance products for homeowners insurance. And the reason of it is really twofold. You know, a lot of times you look at it as they can price risks accordingly, but a big piece of that is also being able to customize coverage in a way that you can't necessarily do in the admitted marketplace. What I mean by that is wildfire deductibles, limitations on loss of use or contents or extended replacement costs, increased water damage deductibles. There's a whole myriad of things they can do to get a risk that they feel is more controllable and something they can get more comfortable with from a risk management perspective. Now, I would say that heading into the end of last year, I felt as though we were making some progress. Clients understood what was happening and were adapting and finding solutions. I really do. the impact on the broader scope of the property casualty world in California from these fires is, I think we're a long ways out to see what it looks like and what that means. We have the moratoriums in place for those who've been affected, so they will get renewals next year. But it's a long-term picture and what's going to happen. I remain optimistic that there will be work from all the parties, the carriers, the brokers, the Department of Insurance, the consumer advocate groups work together to find a solution, because I do think insurance is a critical part of our economy. You know, it's important to real estate and getting mortgages and things of that nature. So I do think that, you know, it may take time and it may take creativity, but I'm hopeful that they'll find ways to find solutions going forward, if that makes sense. Now, on a more micro level, the impact of these fires, as you mentioned, like you, I'm a resident. I grew up in Southern California in Los Angeles, and it was just devastating to watch what happened, right? I mean, this was just, it was hard to see. And my heart goes out to so many people that were impacted, not just clients, but friends and family and all of those, you know, trying to see what happens with rebuilding and what that looks like in the timeline. I think there's just a lot of unknown at this point. Now, the positive is, not in every case, I want to be transparent, but I have seen a lot of insurance carriers stepping up right off the bat, issuing claim payments, trying to help people get back on their feet in a quick manner. And again, that just gives me optimism that they're working hard to do right by their clients that were so impacted and help them get stability, whatever that means, back into their lives in terms of replacement housing and having the comfort that they're going to be supported throughout the process.
And that's all, you know, positive and great to hear. It's not something that you hear often, maybe just from my personal opinion, not something that you hear often with insurance carriers, but it does sound like a lot have stepped up to the plate. So the question then goes, for those not affected by the wildfires, but still at risk, like many in Southern California, for wildfires and other natural disasters, putting aside, what are some things that clients and individuals can look at to make sure that they do have proper coverage? If you just walk us through something that clients should do right off the bat while this is top of mind.
Yeah, that's a great question. So one thing I alluded to was the implementation of certain sorts of deductibles, right? Wildfire deductibles, water deductibles. And I think we're starting to see those, that you're going to see them more regularly used with some of the non-admitted policies. I mean, they've been customary, but start to see them grow. I believe what that does is there's going to be a focus on risk management. And what I mean by that is, how can I protect my home knowing that I likely have in some capacity a large attachment point before my insurance is going to kick in? Right? If you've got a, let's say, $3 million replacement cost and a 10% wildfire deductible, you're taking on the first $300,000. So what can I do to better protect my home to avoid having a claim in its entirety? And it starts with, you know, you can't move the house, you can't move the location. So if you're in an exposed area, there's an inherent risk, but there are things you can do to harden the home. It's something we hear. One of the things we're seeing a lot of clients invest in is ember-resistant venting. So what these are is they're specialized vent that are designed to help smother embers that potentially would go into vents that might go into an attic space. They could catch the insulation and then the house kind of burns from the inside out. So these are special vents to make the house less likely, less susceptible to fire damage. Another thing we're seeing a lot is it's what you're doing from a vegetation management around the property. I think a lot of folks think of brush and how close is the brush to my house. And again, sometimes there's only so much you can control, right? It's not your property line, but the vegetation on the house and what kind of things you have on the house that may be more susceptible to fire and catching an ember, such as cypress trees or palm trees or bark mulch, and making sure, can I replace those things and still keep the aesthetic of the house? And if I can't, do they have proper clearance from the property, right? Is it, you know, so that if it burns, maybe it can smother out before it actually hits the structure. That's something that we're seeing clients really take a more proactive approach in. So that's kind of the one of the wildfire components of it. I think another issue that has become really a big deal affecting the insurance industry over the past several years, and I think we hear about hurricanes and wildfires, and then you see all these convective storms across the Midwest, but water damage, pipes bursting, pipes leaking, and it's for a whole number of issues. Some areas, it's just older properties, older pipes that are giving out, and some just accidents happen. Well, those are really impacting the insurance landscape on a real broad scale, because it, you know, that kind of hits the whole country, right? Everyone's got water running through their house. And implementation of water leak detection systems. So these, I would say we really started seeing these develop 10 to 15 years. They were really starting to come to the forefront. You've seen more players come into the space in terms of providing the devices, more plumbers familiar with it, and the technology has continued to grow. So I last year installed one in my own house. I get a notification on my phone. So let's say that too much water runs, it actually will turn off the water to the house, alerting me so that I can address a potential issue. The thought process there is if you have a leak, you have a leak. But if it shuts off the water, at least the running water stops, right? So you can get in there, fix what's happening, and hopefully contain the damage, as opposed to potentially it running for a day, right? What if it happened and you were out of the house or on vacation? It can contain the damage. So like I said, as the market evolves and we've seen rates increase, and I think, you know, we're going to see rates continue to go up, and there's going to be a lack of available marketplace, at least in the short term. So those, you know, those options may involve some of these provisions and retentions, if you will. And so focusing on how I can minimize and avoid the risk in its entirety is really, I think, a key component going forward. It is something we've developed. You know, we at Alliant, we actually have two loss control advisors as part of our group. So these are, they used to work on the carrier side. They both have experience with high net worth clients and go to some of our clients, meet with some of our clients. And what they will do is kind of walk them through what kind of things can be done to protect the property. If you're going to do a leak detection, how do you source that? What does it look like? Those kind of things. So.
And some of that loss prevention, leak detectors, which I definitely could have used when my dishwasher was leaking at the end of last year for months and had to go through the whole remediation process. So that was fun, but that's a different story. For these leak detections and loss prevention, things that individuals can do, does that lead to a potential discount in the cost of insurance, or are these just preventative things that will help you on the other side of if and or when something happens?
Yes and yes. So I would say there's two fronts. So in some cases, you may get a discount for installation. It depends on the carrier. In some cases, Austin, candidly, it may be a requirement. You know, they're going to come in and say, well, write up, but you got to get a leak detection system within the first year, right? Or we're going to non-renew the policy if you don't do it. And it's, you know, the nice part about leak detection is it's, you know, it can be $1,500 to $3,000. It can be more depending on the property, of course, but it's a one-time cost for the most part. So it's not an ongoing cost, which is nice. The other thing it can do is with some carriers, what they'll do is they'll put a special deductible in place until you install the device. So they may say you have a $100,000 water leak deductible until you install this, then we will match your all other perils deductible, which with our clients is customarily, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $25,000. So it kind of brings it down. So if that makes sense, it can kind of do a whole myriad of things. And then ultimately, some of the brush management you can do, you're always working to make yourself a more appealing risk to markets, right? It shows that you're taking an active approach in protecting your property. And so when we as brokers are discussing with the carriers, we highlight those things to try to make sure they see that the client is invested in protecting their property and kind of sharing in the risk with the carrier, as opposed to the traditional, which is just a straight transfer. And it's, I think, meeting them in the middle. So it can, you know, maybe it doesn't get a specific credit, but it can help you in the long run by maybe bringing more carriers into play or reducing deductibles, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I completely understand that. And back to the notion of wanting to look at the client's current policies and what they should focus on. Insurance documents are very large, and there's a lot of words and terminology that not just everyone knows, and it would take some looking into, some explaining. Putting you on the spot, if you were to pick up a coverage document right now and were to pinpoint some areas someone should look at or some coverage that might be worth not just considering, but seeing if their policy has a certain type of coverage. Is there anything that sticks out that you think is worth taking a second look at?
Definitely. I think there are some things that, you know, and the truth is the market is continuing to evolve, right? So it kind of speaks to that, whether it's analyzing with an independent party, or frankly, making sure you're having those regular conversations at least once a year with your current broker. What's new in the marketplace? What's out there? I would say things that we want clients to take a look at are, everyone's accustomed to the, I got my homeowner's insurance. I think a lot of clients are very familiar with the collections, jewelry, art, and that there can be restrictions. One area that we think is important to continue to evaluate is liability insurance. And the limit of liability may not make sense from 1 year to the next from an umbrella perspective, right? So Austin, I'm sure you have clients that 1 year they have a nice net worth, and then there's a liquidity event and it grows exponentially. Well, now their exposure is different. And is it properly being updated and keeping up with the time and the exposures? So that's an area we regularly see. And then the other purpose of having those conversations is new products that might be out there. So one product in particular that comes to mind that we've seen over the past couple of years that's starting to develop is carriers have started adding personal cyber liability insurance to policies. Now, cyber insurance is very commonly purchased. Your firm has it, my firm has it, right? To protect the businesses from transmission and hacking and potentially information being stolen via the web. Well, a lot of the high net worth carriers in particular have put endorsements that can get clients, you know, 100,000, 250,000, potentially more of cyber coverage. And I won't get too much into the weeds of what it does and doesn't cover because it varies from carrier to carrier, but it does provide, that's something that wasn't offered in the past. And the truth is, even those clients that maybe they have a carrier that doesn't offer it, we've even started to see some independent markets offering it in the personal space. And right, in a world where we're more and more reliant on technology, and especially over the past 5 years, right? Even more so than ever before. It's something that can help provide a little bit of extra protection. If somehow something happens, it can help with the cost to recover your identity, get back on track, get back on your feet, right? That's the regular check-in to make sure you're aware of what new products are developing in the market.
I think that's super interesting because our lives have slowly gone from the physical world to digital, not just digital assets, but, you know, digital storing of documents and safekeepings. And, you know, many years ago, it was you leave things in safety deposit boxes and files and safes, and a lot of important documents are becoming more online, more susceptible to fraud. So now there's, you know, finding that balancing act between what you store in physical form and what you store in digital form. And you should take the same precautions that you take for both.
Completely agree. I think it's definitely something that I think about how many things you do now where online is the only way to do it, right? It's, you know, there are instances where you can only receive things online. You can't even get paper documents anymore. And so I think that's one coverage that jumps to mind. But again, as the insurance industry evolves, these kind of things are out there. And frankly, as the risks evolve, that's also out there. You know, you, again, the regular check-ins, like we said, with clients, what has changed in their lives and then what has changed in the market, and then making sure that program still aligns with what their goals are, honestly.
I think that leads me to, we're talking about coverage that's possible and that's out there, and everyone's situation's different. So how much it costs, the location, that's all very situational. So we won't get into the weeds there. I think there's the other side of insurance carriers not even providing coverage for what might be a need for someone looking for insurance. So if someone or if a client is not able to get fire insurance, as we've recently seen, or some other type of insurance that's out there, is it common to overinsure in other ways? Or what are some ways that clients could look for coverage, or are they just out of luck and not being able to cover for a certain disaster?
It's a good question. So I'll use one line of coverage in particular. So yeah, there are folks that are struggling, or maybe they can only get the California FAIR Plan for their home, and it's the $3 million total insurance is not sufficient. But are there opportunities to get other coverages? And what I mean by that is, yeah, perhaps you can't get full fire insurance limits that meet the protect, you know, the coverage of the house, but did I adequately go out and get a liability policy, which is available? Maybe there is a market that's willing to insure my valuables, jewelry, artwork, wine, silver, something like that. So at least you're insuring part of the program, if that makes sense. So you're kind of buying what's out there. And then there are certain markets we've heard out that write contents only policies for clients that are struggling to get insurance. As the market is developed, it can be a little bit of a jigsaw puzzle, if you will, and finding what you can. And then going through all the options with the clients is also something that we find is very important, because every client has a different risk tolerance, and some are more willing to take on more risk, and some want to buy as much insurance as they potentially can out there. And that's what's out there. So the answer is yes, if you have limitations in fire, perhaps there are ways that you can pick up other lines of coverage to feel like you are at least protected on a certain front, if you will. But again, I think that's just part of, I think that the upcoming months and years, as the insurance market in California in particular continues to develop, we will see what options become available. And, you know, new carriers come in, new markets come in, and they do things differently. They offer different coverages. So I think that's, again, all part of the shifting landscape.
Right. And from a financial aspect, for any types of gaps or holes in coverage, the safe route is to have more in savings, diversified savings, and access to probably alternative ways of financing and alternative ways of liquidity should, you know, have a significant loss. And I think that's all kind of part of the puzzle of the insurance landscape and finding what coverage you have, what you don't, and where you may have gaps.
You're absolutely right. I think that's really an interesting thought process of, okay, well, some of our clients say, yes, maybe they have the, what does this look like if the worst were to happen? Right? How much am I potentially at risk? And what do I do? And I think that's where you and I intertwine, in the sense of, how does that work for rebuilding, or what are my options to replace these things if I'm taking them on, and what's there? And then you always got to factor in the component of a mortgage and what is required by my mortgage, and how does that play, because mortgages still are require insurance. So like you said, I think having, if you're going to take on that risk, what is my financial plan if there is something I need to replace or self-insure, if you will?
Yeah. And no one wants to go through these steps, but we've obviously seen it most recently. Can you broadly go over some of the initial steps that someone should take after getting hit with a significant loss, whether it's a fire, a flood, some type of natural disaster? What are the first steps and some things that you recommend someone doing?
Yeah. So one, the first step is, and it's obviously, you know, we're coming off the wildfire, so it's a little bit different. But if there is the ability to mitigate risk, or prevent additional damage from occurring, that's number one, right? If there's a pipe leak, don't wait to hear from the insurance company. Turn off the water and make sure it stops. If it's on the weekend, you know, and you can get someone out there, a mold remediation company, call them, get them out there, have them start looking at it. What can you do to prevent future additional damage from occurring, right? I think that's important. I think if you have a catastrophic loss, like we dealt with, and everything's gone, one of the first steps is, I think what we say is, you contact your agent as soon as you can. You get them in touch with an adjuster, and they'll start walking through you through the steps. And I think what is interesting, what I've learned from these fires, is every carrier has a different way of doing things. It doesn't mean that the end is not going to be similar in terms of repayment, but each of them have different steps in terms of what their internal protocols may be, and that's okay. So it's just kind of following the steps, getting the carriers what they need from a standpoint of, if you got to put an inventory together of what was lost. And again, that adjuster and the agent are there to help guide you through the process. So like I said, I think the wildfires are a little bit different because you can't stop a loss like that. So it's, how do I go from there? And then each adjuster is giving a different perspective on starting to think about rebuilding. Like, I'll give you a perfect example. The number one thing for a lot of our clients was actually finding replacement housing, you know, kind of finding out, what's my next step? What clothes do I have? What items do I need to get going? Where am I going to live? And working with the adjuster on that front, I think the rest falls into place. But when you have a major loss, if it is a major loss like a flood or a major water leak, I think the key there is, do what needs to do to stop the risk. Obviously, at the same time, making sure you're safe first and foremost, but then utilizing the adjuster, following the steps, getting them what they need in a timely manner will help to make the process as smooth as possible. Again, I hearken on this particular situation in that it's so, you know, and I don't use this word lightly, but it's unprecedented. And so the number of folks impacted, the number of claims, you know, we've told our clients to say, hey, take a second. It may take a little while. Just the sheer number of losses the carriers are dealing with takes time, right? It doesn't mean anything's, they're just working through all the numbers and how they go from there and kind of to get everyone back on their feet. So this situation was a little bit different just because of the sheer number of folks that were impacted. But again, I do think that long-term utilizing your agent and your adjuster, just to pull it back, I think following their guidance, and some brokers like us, we have claim advocates that will help our clients jump on calls and help guide and be the liaison with the carrier. And a lot of times it'll fall into place from there.
Yeah, that's great, Eric. And I think just in closing, for this conversation, it's safe to say that the landscape, the insurance landscape, is rapidly changing. I think a proactive review of your insurance coverage before a disaster happens is super critical. It's important to never underestimate, you know, the power of being prepared for such events, though they may be not likely to happen. Being somewhat prepared and fully understanding your coverage allows for what's likely a smoother path to knowing where you stand in the future after a disaster strikes. So with that, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
I would, and I neglected to mention this because I think this is important in regards to your last question. I think when it comes to areas like California, Florida, areas where we're in catastrophic areas, it's also having an emergency plan in place, I think, is vitally important. So, yeah, as we saw, folks had very little time to evacuate and get things in order. So having a plan of what items are critical to get out of the house, that is important. I'll give you another one. Let's say that you're in different areas. So I'm at work, my wife's at work, and my son's at school. Where are we going to meet? Where's our meeting point for safety? Right? God forbid. I mean, look, I don't know about you, Austin, where I was, we lost power for 24 hours. So, you know, people were without power for days. Where are we going to meet? Where are we going to go from here? if we're having trouble connecting with one another, right? So I think having an emergency plan for these major disasters is really important. And focusing, you know, we tell people, when you think about things you're gonna remove from the house, it's important documents and things that can't be replaced. Remember that just because it has value doesn't mean it can't be replaced. But there are certain things that just, they have a different level of meaning that no level of compensation can truly replace the sentimental value of those. So are those things you'd want to take from the house in an emergency so that you can kind of, like I said, so you have the necessary items to help get back on your feet in a, you know, in a manner as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I think that was a great and really important last point. I'll say that on that, my dad was in the Navy for many years, continues to have and fly his own plane. And, you know, he's got his checklist. And although he's flown his plane thousands of times and has many hours, he's got his checklist that he goes through. And that's just a major part of being in the Navy and being prepared, is when you have your adrenaline pumping, your mind's a little scrambled. But if you have that list, you have your game plan and your list of critical items and things that you mentioned, having that written down, whether it's on your phone, on a piece of paper, and being able to go through to help you think through of those items should something happen, I think is instrumental to what you just said.
You're absolutely right. I'd like to think in a, you know, if there were an earthquake or something like that, I'm rushing the house, but I have a young son and a family, and my prayer, I don't know about you, right? But my priority would be, let's get them out of the house. And I wouldn't necessarily be thinking as clearly as you would. So that's where, to your point, having in advance, taking time, okay, here's what I need. And then it's accessible. And, you know, some of those documents, like we talked about, they can be kept in a certain spot, right? It's all together. Maybe it's in a safe. So it's, hey, go to the safe. Here's the one shelf. I grab all these things and I get out, that kind of thing. So yeah, preparedness, I think, is really important. Sorry, I didn't mention that earlier. I think that's almost the critical step, because that's beyond insurance. That's just, those are the things that no insurance, no risk transfer can get you back.
Right. Well, we definitely just barely scratched the surface. I know we'll probably have some questions after. So if anyone wants to talk more about this topic or others around it, we'll have our contact information and we could talk about this all day. So thank you so much, Eric, for your time and joining me today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Austin. Talk soon.
All right. Bye now.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC registered broker dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.